Before we jump in, this deep dive is brought to you by Cert Fuel. They've got a full Series 3 course with adaptive study quizzes, smart flashcards, and unlimited practice exams weighted just like the real thing. Check it out at CertFuel.com.
Yeah, definitely go check them out.
So imagine this. You wake up, you grab your phone, check your portfolio, and you realize your financial liability isn't just sitting at zero.
Oh, no.
Right? It is actively dropping
into
a bottomless pit. Like a literal bottomless pit, because you sold some of the right to buy wheat futures, and suddenly there's a global wheat shortage making headlines everywhere.
That is the ultimate nightmare scenario right there.
Exactly. Welcome to the asymmetric nightmare of option writing. We're jumping into a deep dive on option theory today, specifically for the Series 3 exam.
And this is a massive topic.
It is huge. Our mission today is for you to deeply learn, retain, and actually apply the core asymmetry of options. Like, no dry lectures today. We have to master the logic behind the rules so the exam questions are just a total breeze.
Right, because if you look at the stakes on this, I mean, part one of the exam, the market knowledge section, spans about 71% of the entire test.
71%?
Yeah, across the first seven chapters. And while the NFA, you know, the National Futures Association, they don't give us exact per unit weights, option theory is the absolute foundation.
It's the bedrock.
Exactly. If you don't understand this specific unit, the later units on hedging or speculating or spreading strategies, they will feel completely impossible.
You literally can't build a house on a swamp. You need this structural understanding. So to make this stick for you, especially if you have an ADHD learning style and hate dry math like me,
mm-hmm.
we are going to use two recurring, highly relatable fictional characters today.
I love these two.
Right. They're going to star in all our hypotheticals. So first up, we have Paranoid Paul.
Ew.
Yeah, Paranoid Paul hates risk.
Yeah.
He is the kind of guy who wears a life jacket in the bathtub.
Just in case.
Just in case. He sweats through his shirt just looking at a volatile candlestick chart.
Yeah.
He desperately wants a safety net. So for today, Paranoid Paul is our eternal option buyer.
He wants his risk capped. He wants to know exactly what he can lose the second he enters the trade.
Exactly. And on the total opposite side, we have Confident Carla.
Oh, okay.
Confident Carla drives a sports car that she paid for in cash. She loves collecting cash up front. She honestly thinks she is way smarter than the market.
She thinks she has the edge.
Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So Confident Carla is our eternal option writer.
Okay, so we've got our buyer and our writer. Where do we start?
Let's strip away all the math for a second. Let's just focus purely on the fundamental human exchange taking place here. What is actually happening in the trade?
Well, every single option is exactly two sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
And only one thing changes hands when the trade is struck.
Just one.
Just one. The premium. The cash.
Okay. So Paranoid Paul, our buyer, he pays the premium, right?
Yeah.
He is the holder, the long.
Right. And in exchange for handing over that cash, he gets a right. Not an obligation, a right.
A choice.
Exactly. If he buys a call, he has the right to go long at the strike price. If he buys a put, he has the right to go short at the strike price.
Okay, so it's kind of like, well, it's like Paul buying a non-refundable, wildly overpriced movie ticket.
I like that analogy.
Right. He pays $50 for this ticket.
No.
But wait, if Paul buys the ticket, he doesn't actually have to go watch the movie, right?
Exactly. He is just paying for a decision that he gets to make later.
So the absolute worst that happens is he's like, nah, I'm tired. I'm staying home.
Yeah, he just decides not to exercise the option. He lets it expire. And the worst case scenario is he just loses the cash he paid for the ticket.
His premium.
Right, it's a premium. No one is going to drag him to the theater.
Okay, that makes sense. But then we have Confident Carla, the writer, also known on the exam as the seller, the grantor, or the short, right?
Correct. So she receives the premium. She pockets Paul's $50. But by doing that, she takes on an obligation.
She sells her choice.
Exactly. If Paul decides to exercise, Carla absolutely must take the other side at the strike price. Assignment is not optional for her.
Okay, so pause right here and think about this for a second, you guys listening. If Confident Carla just pocketed Paul's premium, what happens if the market goes completely crazy against her? Like, does she get to just walk away?
No, absolutely not.
She can't just return the premium.
No way.
Yeah.
She sold her decision for cash up front. So she has to live with whatever Paul decides to do. the clearinghouse will force her to.
Wow. Okay, so that is a massive imbalance. But we need to talk about the specific arena Paul and Carla are playing in.
Right, because this isn't the stock market.
Exactly. And this is where the exam tries to get you. This is a massive trap.
It really is.
Exercising these options does not deliver shares of stock. Like, if you are holding an option on Apple and exercise it, sure, you get Apple shares. But this is the Series 3. We are in the futures market.
Right. When Paul exercises his option here, it opens a live futures position.
Not physical commodities.
Nope. Not physical commodities, not stock. If an exam answer says deliver shares or buys the stock, it is completely wrong for the Series 3. Cross it out immediately.
Okay, so let's break down the exact mechanics of what happens when Paul exercises.
Let's start with a call option. If Paul, the buyer, exercises a call, he instantly gets a long futures position at the strike price.
Because he called the market up.
Right. And Carla, because she is the assigned writer, she gets forced into the exact opposite position. She gets a short futures position at the strike.
Okay, that makes sense. The math matches the sentiment, but puts are a little weirder. Let's test this. You're listening right now. Think about this. Paul buys a put because he thinks the market is completely crashing. He exercises it. What position does Paul instantly get?
Think about it.
He goes short.
Yes. Do not pick the answer that says he goes long.
Right. Because he bought a put, he gets a short futures position. And Carlo, the writer, gets forced into a long futures position.
Exactly. You have to lock this into your brain.
Let's give you a memory aid to repeat. Call the future UP to you, so you go long. Put the future down D on someone else, so you go short.
Call up, put down.
Call up, put down. Say it out loud. Call the future UP to you long. Put the future down on someone else, short.
That is perfect. The holder always gets what the name promises, and the writer just gets the opposite.
Okay, so the instant they exercise, they both suddenly hold live futures positions. Why does that matter so much?
Because of the performance bond, margin.
Ah, margin. The scariest word in finance.
Right. Once exercised, both sides hold futures positions, which means they must immediately post futures margin.
You have to put up collateral.
Exactly. And this perfectly sets up why the writer's risk behaves exactly like futures risk. But we'll get to that. Let's look at paranoid Paul's specific risk profile before exercise.
Well, it's still just an option.
Yes. So Paul's risk is strictly limited. It's capped at the premium he paid.
Right. His movie ticket.
Exactly. And because his risk is limited to what he already paid, he posts NO margin, zero.
Wait, hold on. Why doesn't the exchange make Paul post margin? Isn't this commodities? Like, I thought everyone had to post margin in futures.
No, and that's a huge misconception. Think about what margin actually is. It's a good faith deposit against future losses, right?
Wow.
Well, Paul already paid his maximum possible loss up front. The premium left his account on day one. There's literally nothing left for him to lose.
So the risk is completely closed-ended.
Exactly. The clearinghouse has no reason to demand a performance bond from him because he can't possibly owe them any more money.
Okay, wait. Sudden realization here. Limited risk does not mean safe, does it?
Oh, not at all. And that is another massive exam track.
Right. Do not confuse limited risk with safety.
Exactly. If the option finishes out of the money, it expires completely worthless.
Just a total zero.
Yeah. Paul loses 100% of his premium. And this isn't some rare freak occurrence. This is a routine result.
Because options are a wasting asset, right?
Right. They have an expiration date. Time decay is constantly eating away at the value.
Okay, so let's talk about the break-even hurdle. For Paul to actually just make $0 to break even the future, has to clear his strike price by the full amount of the premium.
Right, he has to earn back his ticket cost.
Exactly. So for a call, the break-even is the strike plus the premium. For a put, it's the strike minus the premium.
He starts in a hole on day one.
Right, he starts negative.
Yeah.
So why would Paul ever take this trade if the odds are so bad?
Because of the return potential, the run.
The lottery ticket aspect.
Exactly. Let's look at the long call. A futures price has no ceiling, mathematically speaking.
Right. So a long call has unlimited upside.
Totally unlimited.
Okay. Imagine this ridiculous scenario. Paul buys a call on corn futures. Suddenly, aliens arrive and they just steal all the Earth's corn, like beam it all up into space.
No more corn anywhere.
Right. Corn prices go to infinity. Because Paul has a long call, he basically makes infinite money.
He does. His upside is completely uncapped, but you have to be careful with the long put.
Oh, right. Because a put means you want the market to go down.
Exactly. So does a long put have unlimited upside?
No. because a future can only fall to zero. It can't go negative.
Right. So his maximum gain on a long put is capped at the strike price minus the cream yield.
Because zero is the absolute floor. Even if aliens steal all the demand for corn, the price stops at zero.
Exactly. Okay, so if Paul is paying for these unlimited or at least massive dreams, who is funding them?
Enter confident Carla. She is writing the options, picking up pennies in front of a steamroller.
She really is. So Carla's absolute best case scenario is simply keeping the premium.
That's it.
That's it. That is her maximum possible gain. She just wants the option to expire worthless so she can keep Paul's cash.
It's totally like an insurance company. Carla is acting like State Farm. She collects the premium up front. If no hurricane hits, it's pure profit.
That's a perfect analogy. But because the event she insured against a massive market move could actually happen, she owes the claim if it does.
Her obligation is open-ended.
Yes. And therefore, she absolutely must post a performance bond margin while the trade is open.
Because the clearinghouse knows she might have to pay out a massive claim.
Exactly. They need to know she has the cash to back it up.
Okay, let's break down Carla's worst nightmare. She sells a naked call.
Ouch.
Right. She doesn't own the underlying asset. The market just moons. It goes parabolic.
Like the alien corn scenario.
Exactly. She is assigned a short future in a market with absolutely no ceiling. Her losses grow to infinity. She is ruined.
Completely wiped out.
Okay, so let me ask you this, and listeners, pause and think before I answer.
Mm.
If a short call is unlimited risk, a short put is also unlimited risk, right?
Listeners, what do you think?
And no. This is where they trap you on the exam.
It's such a common trick.
Right. A naked short put is a very large risk, sure, but it is bounded.
Exactly. Bounded.
Because the underlying future can only fall to zero.
Mm.
So Carla's maximum loss on a short put is just the strike minus the premium she received. It is not unlimited.
Never, ever call a short put unlimited on the exam.
Okay, let's repeat a memory aid for this. Short call equals no ceiling, so it's unlimited. Short put equals a floor at zero, which is the strike minus premium.
Lead with the call for unlimited. Short call, unlimited.
The short call, unlimited. Short put, bounded to zero. So we've looked at Paul and we've looked at Carla individually. Let's put them in a room together.
A side-by-side showdown.
The grand mirror. We are going to rapidly bounce these concepts off each other to just burn the pattern into your brain. Ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, Paul's maximum loss as the buyer
is exactly the premium he paid. It's capped.
Right. And Carla's maximum gain as the writer
is exactly that same premium. Also capped.
It's a perfect mirror. Okay, Paul's maximum gain on a call
runs completely large. It is unlimited.
Which means Carla's maximum loss on that call
also runs large. Unlimited.
Wow. So whatever Paul buys, Carla is funding.
Exactly. And this is a massive exam trap alert. The exam will try to swap these attributes across the sides in tricky word problems.
Oh, like saying the buyer posts margin?
Yes. Do not flip who carries the margin. The writer, Carla, always carries the margin. The buyer, Paul, never does.
Here's a great memory aid. Buyer equals bounded loss, big upside.
I like that. Buyer, bounded loss, big upside.
And the writer is the exact reverse.
Yeah.
Small upside, unbounded loss.
Exactly. And the reason we are hammering this one asymmetry so hard is because it is the key to literally the rest of the exam.
Like the strategy units.
Yes. Think about hedging. Hedging just uses the buyer's limited risk as insurance. Speculating uses this exact risk-reward profile.
And spreading.
Right. Spreading literally just pairs Paul and Carla together in the same account to cap both profit and loss.
It's all just combinations of Paul and Carla. That makes so much sense.
It really is.
Okay. We're going to do a rapid-fire recap of the top testable takeaways from this unit so you can crush these questions. Ready? Number one.
Exercise yields a future, not stock.
Yes. No shares delivered. Number two. A put holder goes what?
Short the future. Put the future down on someone else.
Boom. Number three. Does the buyer post margin?
No margin. Max loss is the premium, but they can easily lose 100% of it.
Because of time decay. Number four. Does the writer post margin?
The writer MST post margin, and their max gain is just the premium.
Just picking up those pennies. And finally, number five. This is the big one.
Short puts are bounded to zero. Only short calls are truly unlimited risk.
Yes. Bounded versus unlimited.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, do you have a final provocative thought to leave our listeners with? Something to mull over before they jump into the strategy chapters?
Yeah, I do. Think about that exact millisecond an option is exercised.
Probably the moment it hits.
Right. Confident Carla goes from holding a nice, bounded piece of paper with a neat little premium attached to it to suddenly staring down the barrel of a live, heavily margined futures contract moving against her in real time.
Oh, wow. Just an instant shift.
Exactly. The math flips from this abstract option theory to hard, cold margin calls in a heartbeat.
A terrifying heartbeat.
So the question to ask yourself is, are you prepared for when that assignment hits?
That is a great question to take into the strategy chapters. Take this foundational asymmetry, really internalize it, and the rest of the Series 3 will start to feel like a breeze. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into option theory. Keep studying the why, and we'll catch you on the next one.